session number 12035, rule 4.
Freddy Temple, rule 4.
The Assyrians, of course, Tel Tamer was a League of Nations village built for the Assyrians, and they spoke very much what would have been the Syriac of Christ's day. Tabitha Kumi would be all right in Tel Tamer, daughter, get up. In that way, and so one was using phrases that one felt Christ would have used for the when he was speaking, actually. Ta, come forward, sit, and open your mouth. and so one had some of them. One had Arabs, and one had some. And some Kurds, and I'm again interested to see all this, the terrible plight of the Kurds, but my, we found some of the Kurds quite difficult.
In what way were they difficult?
Well, they were a bit, I suppose, like a minority people. I think they were rather more aggressive. We were quite glad to when there weren't too many of them. With wealthy sheikhs, it was fun to be the other side of the bargaining, because our doctor taught us that. I mean, we charged them, in order that we could do more work for the poor for nothing. And so one had a nice session at the end, sort of when the wealthy one would say, "And what do I owe you?" And, "Oh, for you, it has been an honour, a pleasure to just to treat." "What can I pay? What can I?" "Oh, no, it has been such an honour. You've been as a son in our house and as a blessing, etc., etc." One poured forth in one's Arabic. And then finally, of course, they came out with far more than one would ever have suggested asking.
Was there a great need in the area, do you think?
Oh, tremendous, yes. Particularly with the dysentery and this awful trachoma and things. I remember going once to... we used to drive out to new places and see whether they would... would be glad to have us come and tell about Tel Tamer and the hospital there. And you would have to wait ages there, because that day had to be very slow with all their hospitality. And you'd hear the sheep being killed, which was going to appear as the great meal later. And then finally it would appear, and the old sheikh, I mean, and they couldn't help being not being very clean, because water was a great scarcity, would grub about in the middle with his dirty hands, and you as guests would be offered the chief morsels. And so it was there to experience actually Christ dipping the sop. The major morsel to offer was the eye, and so one got used to eating eyes. as a slight irrelevancy, but at the moment I was chaplain to Archbishop Fisher when he did his great trip to Pope John the 23rd, and went to Israel, and there first, and we had a meal with a sheikh near Samaria once, and it's one of the few times I've seen the Archbishop disconcerted. This great dish came on, and he suddenly said, "Sort of, Freddy, I can't possibly eat the eye. You've got to do something to stop me being offered the eye." And so I had, luckily, I remembered enough of my Arabic to say, "I'm afraid His Grace has a very delicate stomach, and I wonder if I could have the honour and privilege of eating the receiving the eye on his behalf." one would have that. And one night, Stephen and I, he may have told you of this, we stayed the night with him, and we were He spent the evening picking fleas out of the head of one of his small sons, as we chatted, and then he went off to sleep, and we lay down to sleep. And I woke in the middle of the night as a sheep peered, because the door, it'd be hot weather, no barrier on the door, peered, roamed up to just where Stephen was sleeping, and then performed heavily just by his head. I've never seen Stephen wake more rapidly. So, one got fairly close to the local community there, and learned too the interesting thing that the Syriac church, of course, which the Assyrians belong to, is entirely Nepotic. The Marshy Moon, as the head of it's called, the St. Simon, can't marry, and it goes to his oldest nephew, and but the Marshy Moon is also vegetarian from conception, and so they're rather tough on all his poor sisters as soon as they're pregnant, especially if the first one, they, until one has arrived, a son has arrived, they must stop eating meat in case it's a boy. And one realizes how the destruction of what a help the destruction of Jerusalem was, because the Christian church might have been just in the family. I mean, it's James, the brother of Christ, who becomes head to start with, who had nothing to do with the apostles, but just because, and it was only when it got scattered that they realized it must happen in another way.
Well, was this interesting and valuable for you, you know, to mix with people of different faiths at that time, do you think?
Yes, I think so. Although, I mean, still, I mean, when later people have said to me, sort of, would you, it's really all faiths are just the same. If it's a woman, I've usually said, well, you try being a Muslim wife for a week. I mean, more liberal Muslim countries now, but the strict ones, as we know, back into the veil and everything like that, and absolutely obedient to their husbands and in that way. I mean, one time I was naughty. I remember when we were back again. I was back again with the unit, and in we were in Tunisia, and I wanted to get up to I forget now. One of the holy cities in Tunisia, and I went by train, and I got into a carriage where one young Arab husband and two or three of his wives were in there, and of course they instantly had to put on all the veils and everything, and they were having their evening meal, and he ate heartily from the sort of sandwich box and periodically poked something up underneath the veil to each of them. They weren't given choice as to what what they had.
Had you made your decision at this stage that you were going to enter the church?
I think so. Yes. I think that. And of course, in the hospital in Tobruk, one had found it tremendously useful to get on right close contact with soldiers and others who'd been wounded, and they would ask one and what one was doing and why one was doing it, and want to know. And of course, so many of them too. In one sense, it was difficult to be too. Needed a lot to be really sympathetic with them, because so we had masses of terrible burns from the fact that water was scarce, but there was a good deal of petrol, and so great number of people washed their clothes in petrol, and so would be washing their clothes, and a friend would come up smoking, and woof, Both went up and burnt right from top to bottom. To a really bad burns patient in those takes would only was treated with some form of antibiotic powder to start with, and took ages to get better. God became very irritable and very difficult. And they were stupid enough in the hospital to have our eating times at the same time as the wards. And so it was needed a lot of patience to realize that this was a great moment for the person who couldn't move their hands or anything, to be being fed, and yet you longed to shovel it in fast, because otherwise you were going to have no time for your meal. So I've realized since then, and I've often sort of said to nurses afterwards, you know, you're in a very important but very dangerous job. Most of the people in bed will say you're marvellous, because remember that they're trapped unless they keep on the good side of you. And so it's easy to become conceited, and you'll either become cynics or saints. You'll either think nothing much of them, or they'll be the bane. You'll find it difficult because you've come involved with them too much, and to realise the right balance.
When you went to the Western Desert, what stage had the war reached then?
Well, it was going backwards and forwards. Montgomery hadn't arrived to start with, and we were holding Tobruk at that time. Then, of course, came the next great Rommel advance, and we all had to retreat back into a retreat back again. And that was when I went up and joined Stephen at the Hadfields in Teltowma. There'd been quite an advance, and of course the French were holding Bir Hakeim, which they fought and tried to hold as long as they could, and that was where Raymond Alderson, who was in charge of the unit, was killed. And then Mike Rountree took over there, and then we had to come back again there. We had a lot of times, of course. There was a great deal of free leisure time and freedom when off duty, particularly for me. There wasn't later, because when I joined the unit again after Teltowma, I was on the theatre ward, and that was either very busy or very free. In Tobruk Hospital, there was a lot of spare time, and also what I enjoyed, because I'd enjoyed bridge before, and Roger Whiteley and I, and others, became partners. You always played with the same partner, and so you got to know every move, sort of thing. And we used to play the French officers and others' games, and had some very good games of that. And it was one of those evenings, I think I said, about when you were going to see Evelyn Cottrell, that things had got rather cool between them both, and Jim, who used to sing for us, gave us these dramatic songs about love failing and being deserted. I think it was difficult. I don't remember the sort of religious side or keeping going so well when in the Western Desert, somehow, I don't think. I suppose because different shifts and different times may have been more difficult.
Did you ever have German patients?
Not till we got into southern France and there. And of course, there I expect someone told you there, the Colonel Vernier, the surgeon, and I was on the theatre ward those days, was determined that no German should ever forget that he'd been treated in a free French hospital. So even if it was quite a small operation that only would have needed quite a small cut, he always did a Croix de Lorraine on them. I remember when we had the BBC here and they were interviewing him about tin hats and silk stockings, the photographic part of them, the young men said, "My word, we must search all Germany to find an elderly German." But they didn't think they did. Yes, we had some German patients there.
Were you surprised when Stephen Verney left the unit?
Yes, I was, although Stephen is always, and I've said this to him, he's always someone who has dramatic... one of the great joys and values of Stephen is everything is always incredibly dramatic. I mean, I think still, even at our age now, you sort of... really, you'd always greet oneself and say, Freddie, don't you feel we're entering a new age? There's something new bursting out. I feel it tremendously, don't you? And if only we could get... And you've only got to read Stephen's books that, whatever time they're written, the way, which is probably true, there's always death and rebirth. We're always entering a new age. So I don't think I was so surprised at that. I'd left. I got bad conjunctivitis when up on Teltama, so I had to come back and be in hospital. Down in Cairo for quite a time before rejoining the unit, and that being on an ordinary ward in a hospital in Cairo was quite an experience, because with all the other, some had been totally blinded, some with a bit wrong with them. So I was on the eye ward, and nicknamed, of course, by my accent straight away. Major Stallard was the doctor who treated us all, and my nickname was Major because of my accent.
Not bad for a pacifist. Because you were getting very much into the thick of war, weren't you? And I suppose, particularly when you went over to Italy, you would have been very much with the fighting forces, wouldn't you?
We seem to be always a bit behind, but we had periods of being incredibly busy, especially on the theatre. And again, I have to admit that sometimes, sort of when taking a patient back from some very critical operation, I mean, if the patient died while under theatre care, it was my responsibility to see to everything. On the ward, it was the ward persons, and I must say, sometimes I would be saying to the dear Cameroons carrying the stretcher, feet, blue feet, faster, faster, in the hope to try to get him into the ward before, because there was so much to do back in the theatre. I wish all clergy had that sort of... I mean, I realise how much I owe to that. I mean, when I get peeved with the chaotic conditions some clergy work in their studies and elsewhere, I learnt in the theatre that you must just put everything precisely back in the right place, because so that another sister or a surgeon knows exactly where they can put their hand on it. Straight away, and find what's necessary.
Could I ask you about Italy now?
Yes.
You're going into Italy, yes. and what sort of area you went into? What date would it have been when you went over?
Early 44, and then into France, and then up into France. Early 44, and I remember we were lucky enough to be. Rome was freed, there was a group of us who were amongst the very first to. To have a sort of day off in Rome, and of course never since have I seen the Sistine Chapel so empty. It was marvellous sort of to go round it with hardly anyone in it. there.
Did not the unit have an audience with the Pope? Am I right in thinking that?
That I don't know. We certainly... I don't remember it, but they may have done.
You were at Cassino as well, I believe, weren't you?
Well, that's an interesting thing. That's a... I don't think so. I think that must be a myth that's grown. As myths do grow. Yes, because I don't remember this Ridgway story, or Roy, whatever his name was, story about being in a trench there. I mean, I was mostly in the time in Italy, and we were fairly close to things, but in the theatre ward when things were happening.
Were there times when you had a lot of casualties?
Yes. I mean, the theatre was either non-stop or sometimes sort of three or four waiting to be operated on. And you had the awful thing sometimes of the absolute look on horror on someone being carried in onto the table and who would look down and see that you were then doing your best to... scrub an amputated arm and hand in order to get the rings off the hand to be able to give them afterwards and the hand back is get his things back.
Well, were you near the front, would you think? No.
Yes, I don't know quite how far. No.
Were you frightened, you know, at any stage in the war because of the proximity of the front and the enemy?
I think petrified when in the hold of the ship coming back from Namsos, possibly not so much from the bombing, but the realization that this smoking might send us all up. And then, and more at times, I think, from wondering whether one's own sharing competence. Because, I was all right. I wasn't too good a driver. And I remember when landing off a rather steep beach in southern France, and my lorry wasn't working terribly well then, and and the landing craft sort of, and I'd driven up a bit. Then I stalled, and the people at the top who were sort of seeing that things went all right just sort of, it was that sort of angle, and said, sort of, "Don't reverse, mate, because the craft's gone. You'll be." and having then to make sure that one did get off all right enough.
Do you think, when you look back, you know, did you were you partisan in the war? You know, with the troops you were fighting, you were working alongside in the situation of battle. You know, did you find yourself being on one side rather than sort of neutral, in a neutral position?
Oh yes, I think one got. I've always been a great Francophile, and I liked them very much. And we did have a marvellously sort of, in one sense, they're marvellously free and easy and chaotic. And I expect some of the nurses have told you the fact that they wanted to get over straight away into Italy, but were going to be kept behind, and they were all so Vernier allowed them all to dress up as soldiers. Onto the troop ship, but then it was discovered before the ship sailed, and fury, of course, from the Americans who were in charge of it, and ignominiously they all had to troop off and come a little later in another way. And even when operating, not when it's too serious a case, but if a swab that Colonel Vernier had thrown on the ground, if he hadn't got it into the bucket, he would then stop and with his feet on both sides try and do little jumps and try and get it into the bucket. And we all had to wait till he'd finished. managed to do this. And so, I'm very fond of the French, and if I, and still, I mean, when we went down the Rhine on holiday last year, the German sides, I wondered what it was about it that, I mean, it was all so neat, so orderly, so tidy. And then suddenly we landed at Strasbourg, and suddenly it dawned on me, my, this is marvellous. This is the some of the dirt and initiative and lovely chaos of France. I mean, an African French came up and sort of, which they would never have done the other side, and sort of felt Joan's dress and said, how lovely this is. no, I think the great character. And as Vernier said in the farewell, apparently, when I'd got back, that the French and the English need each other. They're different as a knife and a fork, but both are necessary. He didn't say which was which.
Did they understand your pacifism, do you think? You know, how they... Yeah. Wonder how they regarded you.
No, I think they just tolerated. This is the quaint, strange English, probably. There. And of course, the dear girl, women drivers, I mean, as always, it's the Quakers. We can understand them. But the others, we think, are probably frauds. Whereas... although one couldn't argue that because one was one of the others, one can't help feeling in a way the others had possibly had to make more radical decisions coming out of their tradition too. and I think Mike Rowntree and others would admit that the FAU owed a lot to its non-friends compared with those who were.
So going through France... When you went through France, which I believe you did.
Yes.
Yes. I wonder, that must have been very exciting for the French. Was it sort of going home on their own territory?
Oh, it was. Oh,
did you find that?
Oh, tremendously, yes. And we had some, joined us at some moment. I can't imagine what she was thought to be good at, to work at in the hospital. Jean Sablon, who was a great singer and sort of meant a great deal. And wherever we arrived, sort of in the evening in a restaurant or cafe, she would leap onto a table and sing in a great in great style. And we were chaired and welcomed and there, and it was nice to be with them. Marquis, though, one realised that the underground movement there, again, are not great idealists. They are, as they have to be, are probably rather just toughies. And found it terribly difficult when the fighting had finished for them, and they were then put on wards, and some of the Cameroons were sent back to Cameroon. And the Marquis were young Marquis were found having to sweep floors and things, and I remember one time he'd say, "Oh, to be back going pop 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 in the hills," which he was missing it tremendously instead of sweeping up a hospital ward.
Were there any unpleasant sort of incidents in France? You know, I was thinking of perhaps retribution with those who'd collaborated. Did you have any problems serving with French people?
I don't remember noticing that myself. One did, of course, hear of sort of the women who'd had their heads shaved and things like that. And I did at the moment wonder, I mean, it seemed incredible that this great hero of the First War, was Marshal Pétain, had then been denigrated so completely because of coming in charge of occupied France and collaborating with the Germans. But, in the end probably misguided, but he had a feeling that France had become corrupt, didn't he, and that and that they needed purifying, and I forget, instead of liberty, egality, fraternity, what was it for something, obedience and family and something else as the great slogans, that there was again some point on that side probably as well. But now I never saw any retribution or that side of things. No. That way, I don't think, no.
Again in France, I think you were fairly close to the front all the time, weren't you?
We were, yes, so I don't think... I was with the little unit that then had to go back across to where there was a little occupied German pocket, and I remember we went in there and had to... they'd called for aid, and we dealt with some casualties there before we came out again. And we were in Alsace, yes, and it was interesting there, I mean, with a view to what one was doing later, to see what they take for granted, Alsace-Lorraine, so long, church buildings being used by both, by Catholics and Protestants, on a Sunday, I mean, one at 10 and the other at... the other at 11, and greeting each other as they passed. there, I think. And, of course...